We're in the second lesson, of course, of a series that we're dealing with basic traits of good character. And we started last week, Steve did, with a lesson on how to build character. And tonight we want to look at another aspect. It really has to do with, it is part of our character, but it also has an awful lot to do with some of the other things that follow on in the way of character traits, and that is love. And I think when you talk about love, as in this lesson, it's titled Love / Love of Man. We're going to deal with love of man. But I think the probably the unspoken thing about love is that of God, our love of God. And if we in fact love God, care about God, then that's going to drive us to do what God wants us to do. So there's that aspect. We're going to spend most of our time dealing with not the love of God per se, but rather what God expects us to do in the way of this character trait. You may remember Paul, in fact, probably if I asked this audience to, if I were to say love, and tell me about where you might read about love, probably a number of you would just say, well, let's go to 1 Corinthians 13, and it would be a good chapter to go through. There's one thing that Paul said in the course of that, and as he was talking about really the negative, that is the absence of love. And listed a number of things you might do, but without love, they mean nothing. And so that's an aspect that ought to, that we want to apply to ourselves. We don't just go through motions. One can. The world goes through a number of just motions. We can do that. But the question is, are we doing it out of care and concern for our fellow man? And so we'll look at that as we go through this lesson a little bit. If I were to ask you to give me a word that perhaps was just the opposite of this love, what might you come up with? One word, one adjective.
Hate.
Hate's one. Not the one I'm looking for.
Selfish.
That is one. This is the beauty of being a teacher. You ask questions, and you just keep asking somebody answers the way you want them to. But the idea of selfish is just the opposite of this kind of love, this kind of concern for your fellow man. You look up in the dictionary, and look up the word in the dictionary. It's concerned excessively or exclusively with oneself. Seeking or concentrating on one's own advantage, pleasure, or well-being without regard for others. And so when you consider one's behavior, your behavior, in the context of the people around you, the world around you, it causes you, it may cause you to test yourself. You know, is my action out of selfishness, this kind of selfishness? I'm not worried about you, or is my actions, my behavior going to be driven by a love of my fellow man? There are a number of things that can follow on to this sort of selfishness. What might they be? From your own experience, from your own knowledge. Those of you who have been in my class probably know I'm not going to move on until I get an answer. And not complicated. What might selfishness, this opposite of love, bring about to people? Meaning speech. So how you conduct yourself and view other people. It could be apathy. You don't really care about anybody. I care about me, but I don't care about you.
Content.
That really is. When you get that extreme of a view about others, contempt for them, then you're really, I visualize that as we're really elevating our own view of ourselves, our self-worth. Others? Well, in your lesson, some of the things you might talk about as far as results from this attitude is really, obviously you don't care much about anybody else, but it will not cause you to really do any sacrificing for anybody else. My time's my time, not yours. My money's my money, not yours. My good life is my good life. I'm not going to share it with anybody. My behavior is respectable. I don't like anybody else's behavior if it's not like my behavior. So I have a view of self that is very much just that, a view of self. Paul would talk about it to Timothy as being a lover of self. And that's really the concept that's in view when you talk about the wrong kind of love. Just the opposite of what we're talking about in this class. You look around at, are you exposed to people who are financially different, on a different strata than you are. They may not have as fine a house. They may not have drive a new car. So how do you look at the people like that? Am I better than them? Am I going to basically conduct myself in looking at that other person and viewing that person? Carol called it contempt. We certainly can call it bias in that sense. What did James go to James? We're on the aspect of really, if you like, financial. You see, in chapter, starting in chapter 2, James makes this point: "My brethren, do not hold your faith in our glorious Lord Jesus Christ with an attitude of personal favoritism. For if a man comes to you in your assembly with a gold ring and dressed in fine clothes, and there also comes in a poor man in dirty clothes, and you pay special attention to the one who is wearing the fine clothes, and say, 'You sit here in a good place,' you say to the poor man, 'You stand over there,' or 'Sit down by my footstool. Have you not made distinctions among yourselves and become judges with evil motives?" And I will say this, personal observation, brethren here are very good about not falling into that trap, at least in terms of behavior. It's very friendly, very welcoming church, and it doesn't matter if somebody comes in the building in fine dress or in less than fine dress. I think it's important is that they're a creation of God just like you are. And how are we going to treat them? Ability. Some people have more ability in a variety of ways. It could be ability to speak, and somebody that doesn't have that ability, you can look down on them, not hold them in high regard, not show love toward them, not treat them equally. And yet you should, we should. Anything else around that? There's just a whole litany of things. In this area, and I'm going to share this with you. There was a man here years ago, and I'll give him credit for being willing to stand up and say this and admit this was a problem. But he had a problem with race. Specifically, he had a problem with Hispanics. And he said, I grew up, I was biased. So that's something he had to fight. So, you know, if we're in this area, it's very easy for us as a Texan to look at others that are not, in my case, not Caucasian. It would be very easy to look at those people as something less than me. And I have no business doing that. Certainly, I hope I don't. But that's a risk that we have, falling into that trap. And a lot of that, sometimes that comes by the influence of those around you. You let the people around you have those views influence you that way. And that peer pressure acts that way sometimes. We're to rise above that. We're to, as Christians, and really as all men, as men and women, we're to rise above that. We should be treating our fellow man with love and care and concern, and therefore, if you have this aspect, this attitude, what's going to drive you to do a lot of other things that are going to be positive in God's eyes. Yeah, I guess.
Well, I think that so many times Christians have the knowledge of God and they can talk about God, but it's not easy for them to start a conversation with someone and work the conversation into talking about God. But it takes practice. It's something you have to work on. And when you think about love of your neighbor, and kind of let them know about what God says,
Yeah, it's a good point. That's right. I think of us as individuals, the risk we run of looking down on somebody, well, they're never going to be converted. What's the point of talking to these people? Go look in the mirror and say, ask yourself, who's in the mirror that I'm looking at, and what was this person's state before they were saved? Because there was a time when every Christian in here was lost. And that's the way people are. They're in that condition. We need not let that stop us. Sorry? Oh yeah, we have problems at times. What does Matthew's 22:37 say the second greatest commandment? Love your neighbor as yourself. And this may be a little bit, I hope this will be any questions clear enough that it won't be a problem answering. What is the basis for that command? Love your neighbor as yourself. Yeah, it came from God. That's not my question. What's the underlying basis for it? Why is that command given? Made in the image of God. Thank you. Genesis 9:6. We're all made in the image of God. And God cares about His creation. So that demands out of us this kind of love, care, and the behavior that follows that. When we say love your neighbor as yourself, I want to focus on the as yourself. I mean, why I say love your neighbor as yourself? What does that tell you?
Mind that you love yourself and take care of yourself.
Yeah, I mean, if you're not, I mean, you consider for a minute how you might behave. Let me say it a different way. Consider how you do behave with respect to yourself. It's pouring down rain, lightning, and you got a nice house, you go outside. No, you provide shelter. You got a sense, you provide shelter for yourself. I think most of us probably enjoy eating. We feed ourselves. Most of us enjoy staying healthy. we go to the doctor. These are things, you know, when God says, love your neighbor as yourself, give consideration to that, you know, give consideration or in, reflect on, what does that mean in terms of how I treat myself? I nourish and cherish myself. Well, guess what? That needs to be our perspective with respect to people. And if we are willing to feed ourselves, to treat ourselves to shelter, to keep from harm, to concern ourselves with our well-being, mental and physical health, then when we are dealing with people, people are just like us. They have, you know, we all have issues that come before us. And so our response to that should not be one of this, you know, the selfishness. We're concerned about ourselves, but we're not concerned about you. People have needs, and we need to be open to those needs. Okay?
Would it be concerned about their welfare be an issue that loves your neighbor? And it includes yourself, you know, their welfare.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, we're concerned, or not we should be, we're concerned about our spiritual well-being, which incorporates everything, and it's the same. Sure, we're concerned about it. We ought to be concerned about their soul. And in fact, you know, our focus, by and large, God expects our focus not to be on the things of the world, but on Him, on heaven. Spiritual matters. That's where our focus ought to be.
I wasn't going to say anything because I thought it might be a lesson in the future, but I think it's worth pointing out that you can't really love others unless, you know, that love yourself kind of be like glossed over it a little bit, but it's really pivotal because you can't treat others the right way unless, you know, you have to love yourself.
Yeah, if you don't care about yourself, if you've got that kind of esteem, if you do not care about yourself, then you're not going to be encouraged. You're not going to be self-encouraged to reach out to others. Craig?
It's interesting that Paul in Ephesians 5 talks about the marriage relationship, also talks about a man loving his wife as he loves his own flesh. And I think when we're talking about loving your neighbor, selflessness is in that. Goes even a step deeper with your neighbor and the person that you should be closest to. You demonstrate that love just like you love yourself. Your own flesh, cherishing. That's a very deep love. That's sometimes the relationship out of all the relationships we have with people around us. That's not just the most challenging. It can't be a challenging one because you have day to day interaction. And, you know, you're definitely asking to be.
Can you have selfishness in the wedding, in a marriage? Yeah. Your partner, your spouse in a marriage, is a human being. I mean, these things apply to that person as much as they do to another brother or a person of the world. So it's not that it's not applicable. I think sometimes, since Steve made the point, sometimes we think, people think a marriage license is a license to do a lot of things that they don't really have a right to do. They would never have done when they were courting. Matthew, let's turn to Matthew 22. I'm sorry, let's turn to Luke 10. This is, of course, a story that we're familiar with, very familiar with, but this lawyer stood up in talking to Jesus, and Jesus makes the point, or he answers the question really that Jesus is asking, and of course ends it with, "And love, you shall love your neighbors yourself." And so Jesus goes on and tells a story, and it exemplifies what we're talking about. And there's a contrast in here between the two, these three men, among these three men. So you, when the priest came by and saw this fellow on the side of the road who had been robbed and in need of help, what did the priest do? What did the Levite do? There's something about the other side of the road. It must have been the road for all of these men, right? So you have two Jews. You got three Jews. You got one that's apparently a Jew, come down to Jerusalem. So you got three Jews. And two of them are able to help the third one. And neither of them do. And so along comes the Samaritan. What does the Samaritan do? I mean, just summary. The word, he helps him. He sees a man in need. And the fact that he's a Samaritan, and the fact that he's a Jew, and this guy's a Samaritan. And I'm saying he's a Jew, strictly questioning about Jerusalem. And that's an assumption on my part. But he, it really doesn't matter whether he is or he isn't. Here's a Samaritan who's willing to help another person. And you have these Jewish men that ought to know better, and they go marching on their way. They don't want anything to do with it. So you see the kinds of traits that are shown as the Samaritan responds to this guy on the side of the road. What are some of them?
Well, starting with mercy and compassion. If he didn't have compassion for him, he wouldn't have shown mercy, and then he would have gone and taken care of this guy's wounds and made sure that he was taken care of at the end. So what come out, he did things coming out of compassion and mercy. The other two did not have compassion or no mercy.
What did he do? He said, I feel for you, therefore I have compassion for you. Somebody will come along and take care of you. Here's a man who had a need, didn't have a place to stay, he was been injured. And this, and there was no obligation on the part of the Samaritan in the sense of it was some kinfolk of his. It was a brother, physical brother. There's a man in need. And he provided for him. Not only did he provide for him then, but he made provision for him with the innkeeper and said he'd take care of when he comes back. Linda brought up 1033, I think it's 33. Sorry, not 33. 37. I'll get it right there. 33 is what I wanted. Compassion. Show compassion. The people in this room, by and large, call ourselves Christians. Who exemplified throughout his life compassion? There's a lovely question. Jesus. And it's interesting as you read about Jesus' activities. He had compassion for people who were in stress, distress. He had compassion for those that were hungry. He fed them. He had compassion for those that were sick.
Mourning
a death. He had more than that. He restored somebody that had died, didn't he? Because there was that mourning. He felt, had that compassion. And so Jesus was, and this is true with God. You read through the Old Testament and you'll see in that, in a number of events in the Old Testament, God had compassion on his people. They didn't deserve, But he had concern and love enough, he had compassion on him, and it caused a reaction on his part. So you know, we can be selfish, we can not deal with other people as God's creation, and that's going to create a problem for us, not for other people, because it's a failure on our part. So it's something we need to work on if we're not.
I think right here is one of the examples where in today's world we might let fear of the unknown and fear of what might happen
Yeah, like everything else in life, we always have to make judgments about how we're going to respond. But one thing about it, we better not find ourselves responding or failing to respond simply because we are concerned about self. Dennis?
Well, I was thinking about this situation with the
Bear in mind that you think about our situation as individuals. Probably no one in here, well, no, I can't say that. Maybe you did. Probably a lot of people in here did not accept Christ the first time they heard the gospel story. It probably took some time, took some teaching. And there are some that first time they hear it, it's such an eye-opener that it makes a big difference, and they immediately respond to it. Things are not always appreciated at the point in time that they happen. Last week Steve talked about the Song of Solomon. What kind of love was in the Song of Solomon, or is in the Song of Solomon? A romantic, just, you know, an emotional, driven by the other person. The emotional draw one has for another person. That's not the kind of love, of course, we're talking about here. This kind of love isn't an emotional love. It's a conscientious love. It's a love that's commanded, in fact. And so you can't command emotion. You can command it, but people don't respond. Can't respond emotionally to a command. But this love is not an emotional thing. It's a, I'm going to call it an intellectual thing. It's a thing of the mind. It's a thing of one has to consider and act on. And so when Jesus was talking in Matthew 22:40, what did he say that indicates this character trait of love is a basis for all of the character traits? The whole law and the prophets depend on. And so when you look at the verses that were given, it's just a demonstration of that. Going back to the law, Leviticus 19. And in that, there are some specific ways that love demonstrated itself. What are some of them that you saw? What do you see in there? And speak up. You don't have a microphone like I do.
Don't lie or steal.
Okay, don't lie or steal.
Don't
deal falsely with somebody.
Love those that hate you.
Love those that hate you, or do not, certainly do not, verse 17, do not hate others. What else? I heard two people and didn't understand either one of them.
Not to deal falsely.
Joanna?
Do not bear grudges.
Don't slander. Don't murder.
Okay, don't murder. Don't slander.
Forgive.
Does it matter whether a person is poor or rich as far as how you treat them? The judgment of them. So these are things that they're the negative side of it. I mean, that is, do not do this, do not do that. But it's very easy for us to make the opposite side of it. What we should do, we should not treat them. We should not lie. We'll tell the truth. And this is particularly in view of other people. Truth about them. Truth to them. And I try to deal with them falsely. Down in verse 33, what's it say? Is this our brethren we ought to treat this way? Stranger in your land. I mean, it's not just your family that you need to deal with the positive side of what's listed in Leviticus. So it's those who are outside of your immediate family, strangers. What about 35 and 36? This is not, these are right out of the book. And I mean, this is a waste and measure. I mean, you're to basically not try to cheat. Be honest, Michael said. Yeah, be honest with people. And not try to cheat them. And so, you know, these are things that you wouldn't, if you have love, these are not things that would be taking place. You're not considering the other person. You're just considering self. You're trying to get advantage. You're trying to hold yourself, whether you're trying to get power, trying to get money, trying to get prestige. The only thing that's important is me. So you take every advantage you can of somebody else. And that's an excess. But we can do that in little things. I call them little. We can find ourselves trying to take advantage because we don't want to be embarrassed by the truth. So we lie a little bit. Or shade it a little bit. So watch out for that kind of thing. Romans 13. How's this love fulfilled? Great silence comes across the room.
He that loves another has fulfilled the law.
Yeah, okay. Do what?
I put it by how it acts.
By how it acts? How does it act?
Verse 10, there's no wrong to your neighbor.
There's no wrong to your neighbor. Like what? I mean, that's a broad statement, and you can leave it at that, choose to. But he goes on and says some more about it, right? said, or has said, you shall not commit adultery, you shall not murder, you shall not steal, you shall not covet. And they sum it all up in one, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. So once again, God keeps coming back to the same thing. Love God, love your neighbor as yourself. And so the behavior that we have, one with another, or one with our the race of mankind, is to be one of the kind of love that really exemplifies God. We're concerned about people. Rocky.
It's interesting, Romans 13. Who is a Christian?
Church
grows is a
pretty good
church.
So it reminded us of the world. Character in the mind of Christians. Verse chapter, we're not going to study Romans. Chapter 12 deals with one another. One another. He keeps talking about one another. So that was, you know, that was among Christians, like he points out. Okay. Luke, another one of these lists, Luke 66, Jesus discussed another number of matters as far as what man would do or not do, starting in verse 27. And you can phrase those however you choose. I'm interested in what you said. What all does Jesus tell those who he's trying to teach?
This is the one I would say most of the hate God.
It's a true statement, nonetheless. There's a great silence. Okay, what Jesus says love would cause men to do or not do?
Love those who hate you.
Okay. Easy to do? Is that easy? How do we know it's doable?
He did it.
He did it. I mean, our God did it. That's one way to know. What else can we find ourselves doing?
Pray for those who mistreat you.
But if they do mistreat you, I get through praying with them, I can get my revenge. I'm now clear to get my revenge, right? No. Don't retaliate in vengeance. What else would you say?
Be merciful.
Treat it as you want to be treated, basically, as well. Okay? So these are some of the, you know, Jesus, it's just one isolated case, you can see it time and time again. This is the kind of teaching Jesus had. This is the kind of mind conversion, really, that God kept trying to bring about in people.
So after this section, we don't have license to defend ourselves because of this section.
I don't think so. I mean, it's not dealing with that. Let's take Paul for example. Paul defend himself?
Yes.
Did Paul defend himself?
Yes.
But how did he defend himself in that case? Under the law. Using the law. And so, you know, you and I may get into some kind of problem. It's not ours to take vengeance. We don't say we can't defend ourselves, but rather it's an attitude, it's a case of, in that case, the law, that's what the law is put here for. or something like that. Talking about the governmental law. But Jesus, as he was trying to deal with, well, I'm going to make a grand summation statement. As he was trying to deal with the attitude or the character of those who were, in particular in this case the Jews, contrasted with the character of those of the kingdom. It's two different views of behavior. And this, you see this over and over again. You see it in what we call the Sermon on the Mount. Throughout that, you see the same thing. And so I don't find this any different than that. Okay, time is up. I told Linda I'd never take that much time on this, but I wanted to make sure I took it all. But we're going to wrap up here. I just wanted, there are four verses, or five, if you want to count them. There were four different LSA books and chapters here. You know, we all know what John 3:16 says. And, you know, one of the things that comes throughout these verses that Steve wraps up with is God did not make a distinction among mankind as far as who he loved and who he, in the case of Jesus, who he died for. I don't care if he's white, black, yellow, red, rich, poor, the vilest, what we call the vilest sinner, that is somebody who maybe had murdered or was, you know, just living a life of total degradation. The gospel was, and the sacrifice was made for all who would accept the conditions of it. God loves all people. Doesn't mean he's going to forgive all people if they don't turn to him. But he has that kind of mercy that he holds out. And it's a tough standard. I mean, I'm no fool. It's a tough standard to live up to. To strive to be like. Ephesians 4 talks about until we grow into the full stature of Christ. That's a tough standard. That's what we ought to be driving toward. Okay, I appreciate your input, your attention. We didn't spend any time on the parents. Linking up to the parents part of this. Steve can pick that up if he wants to. But hopefully you, particularly those of you who are parents, are spending some time setting the example and teaching on these matters.